The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by a man who is always over the top, Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Not sure if you understood the reference, but I will explain if it doesn't make sense.
Go ahead.
Well, please, you do. Had a truck stop just go out of business here in the state of Iowa, one that was a little sentimental to you.
The Boondocks.
The Boondocks. And it made me think about truckers, and it made me think about the movie Over the Top, which is arm wrestling. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie, the Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
But I just thought with the Over the Top reference.
That's quite a connection that you've drawn.
I know it is, but
how you go from the Boondocks closing to,
because it's a truck stop. It's a truck stop, Andy. It's okay. We made the connection. It's like the switch when you put your hat backwards, even though you don't wear too many hats. You transition into this journalistic beast, and you've got it going right now.
The Boondocks, man.
You got to fill people in on this, because I'm sad that it's going away.
So the Boondocks USA truck stop about 3 miles from where I grew up. Junction of Highway 20 and Interstate 35. My dad would always tell people, like, we're from Williams, Iowa. And then, you know, half the people didn't, you know, half the 80%, I don't know, wouldn't know where Williams, Iowa was. But then he'd say, well, Boondocks. And people would always, oh, yeah, we know where the Boondocks is. It became pretty famous. You know, Ricky Stanzi 1 year showed up at the former Iowa quarterback who had a cup of coffee in the NFL. Led the Hawkeyes to a 11-win season and an Orange Bowl win back in 2009. One day showed up wearing, I think, like a Boondocks hat or a Boondocks shirt. And you'd see these Boondocks bumper stickers around the state here and there. So I don't know if I would go so far to say iconic, but
for us within the state, I think, what'd you say, within the area, it's special. I don't know what the terminology you used when you described it, but of local interest, I think
my
it was,
sister worked at the Boondocks. My niece worked at the Boondocks. It was an institution.
Yeah.
In Hamilton County.
I've got to think that our guest today has been to Boondocks.
We should ask him.
Well, we should, but
we probably
will probably forget to ask him, but we have to assume that Joe Colone, our guest today, who has a great story that we're going to get to, we have to think with his connection with the University of Northern Iowa, being from Clear Lake, Iowa. Yeah.
It's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, he had to have been there. We'll just
assume. At least have gone past. I mean, we know he's gone past.
Yeah.
100%. If you think about his career, it's right on the Highway 20 junction, right? I mean, he goes from Iowa Central to Fort...
He's done
from Fort Dodge to Cedar Falls, and then going to the state tournament.
Yeah.
Clear Lake, down Interstate 35 to Des Moines.
It's all Joe Colone, and Joe Colone's going to be representing the United States at the World Championships at 61 kilograms, 134 pounds. Nation Garrett out with an injury, Joe Colone in, and I feel good about Joe Colone being in. He won the first match in the series, won the U.S. Open over Nation Garrett, so they were 2-2 on this season. Tell you what, I think he has a real shot at winning a world medal, and as history has shown us, the replacements can do as well or better sometimes than what the starter could have been.
Well, you look at USA Wrestling here in the last couple of years at World Championships at the age group levels, and it's been incredible what alternates have done. Sevion Severado and Greco-Roman last year, junior world silver medalist. Aaron Brooks at the cadet level doesn't make the team originally, gets in as an alternate, and then rolls through the bracket, wins a cadet world title. And then most recently, Zach Elam at the Junior World Championships finds out about 12 days before the tournament starts that he's going to be the guy. Doesn't have a passport, has to fly from Missouri out to Denver to get his passport. was weighing about 230 at the time, had to drop about 17 pounds to get himself ready, and then just has an incredible tournament over in Slovakia, makes the finals. Ends up losing in the finals to a pretty seasoned Russian who's done really well at the senior level already. But Zach had a heck of a tournament and grabbing a silver medal there. So there's that. And then also in Joe Colon's situation, I mean, he's going to go in as a four seed.
Yeah.
So it's not like the NCAA championships where alternates, you know, are facing a pretty uphill climb. And, you know, in Joe's case, he's put enough points on the board at ranking series tournaments that he's the four seed. I think if it works out the way that I imagine it will, and I don't know, you never know with some of this stuff and how it'll play out. But, you know, if all of the guys that have earned ranking series points and seedings, if they'll show up to the world championships. But if Joe is indeed the four, I imagine that will put him on the top side of the bracket. And that means the smaller side, one fewer match to make the finals. But also Gajimurad Rashidov from Russia has been, I think if you look at it on paper, he's the clear-cut favorite, a guy who's a returning silver medalist from a year ago at a stacked weight class at 61 kilos last year. A lot of those guys have gone up, but he will be on the opposite side of the bracket if it plays out the way I think it will. And, you know, sets up really well for Joe Colon, I think.
And let's go to your point when we had Nashawn Garrett on the program. Joe Colon won the first match, and if you're at the World Championships, that keeps you alive. It's a one-and-done system. And so I think that kind of bodes well for him. He won at the U.S. Open. He won in the first match at Final X in the World Team Trials. So with that system, all you have to do is win that one match, be up for the one time. It's not a best of three. So I think Joe Colon has a great opportunity, as history shows. Hey, 2001, we saw Cale Sanderson didn't compete there, and then Brandon Egham got a silver medal. Go back to 1982, Randy Lewis, from what I hear, had to be pulled out of a bar. Leroy Smith had made the team. They said, Randy, you're in, and then he ended up placing fourth. Really got hosed in the match, got beat by Sterev. It was a match that he won, and then they did some backdoor politics and took the match away. So one of those things that you hate to see. Hopefully we've got that cleaned up, but a situation where Randy Lewis filled in, got fourth place, represented the United States exceedingly well. So real good opportunity here. And like you said, he's the four seed, and Nashawn Garrett was not seeded. So I think the timing's right, and I think he's motivated to do that. And another situation here in the women's side, too. Allie Reagan's out. Jenna Burkett's in.
Yeah, and it's a tough break for Allie. She's a two-time world silver medalist the past 2 years, and you know, trying to make that climb and go one step higher this year. And you hate to see opportunities lost due to injury like this. And same for Nashawn. But, you know, the show goes on, right? And somebody else has got to fill that spot. And I'm excited to see what, like you, in Joe Colon's case, I'm really excited to see what he can do at the world level. And he's already posted a lot of big wins this year.
A lot of big wins. And I think that he is someone the United States, like Nashawn Garrett, can get behind because you know he's going to bring it. You know there's probably going to be a throw somewhere in there. He's looking for those big opportunities. And with the 10-point tech fall, 4-point throws, it's really a situation where it really favors his style of wrestling that I could easily see him getting some of these matches where he rolls up guys, has a good gut wrench, get on top, able to get some of those 10-0 tech falls.
Yeah, the thing that's going to be, I think, really important for Joe, and he's at times can get wide open, and his style lends itself to high-scoring matches, and you probably can't wrestle as wide open as maybe Joe Colon has in the past. And I think he's cognizant of that as well, but he will keep himself in a lot of matches too, just because of the high octane offense that he has.
In addition to Joe Colon, as we look at what's coming up with the 2018 World Championships, we've discussed how it's going from 8 weight classes to 10 weight classes this year. I'm as excited about the opportunity with Kyle Dake and David Taylor being the two guys that we get that opportunity as anything. I've seen things with Kyle Dake, and to think here he is at 174 pounds, that he started in college at 141 pounds, and even David Taylor being 157 pounds, bumping up to 189 now. It's really a neat journey how they've gotten to this higher weight class. And I think a good storyline for how you can be successful at a lower weight class and just continue to maybe not focus on weight as much, but focus on the competition and in improving your skills. And I think both these guys are poster childs for that.
Yeah. And in some cases, maybe some of this was born a little bit out of necessity, just from the standpoint, you got a 5-time world and Olympic champion locking True. Down the 74 kilo spot there in Jordan Burroughs. Or as you like to call it, 163 pounds.
I do.
Because you're going with pounds. And I'm
with kilos.
But that being said, I think one of the things that's really neat about Taylor and Dake is the fact these guys have been like friends for a long, long time. And that history goes back to their childhood when, you know, they were scrapping it out. And I remember writing a story about them when NCAAs were in Des Moines, when they were going to square off, and they put that match, the last match of the tournament, first time that the NCAA has juggled the finals order. In writing that story, one of the things I learned is the fact that their friendship went back quite a ways. And when, you know, during the summers, if I'm not mistaken, I think Dake had grandparents in Ohio. And so when he would travel out to Ohio, that him and David would get together and, you know, they'd roll around a little bit, and, you know, Taylor would go out east to see Dake too. And so it's good to see that those two are teammates again and not having to duke it out for NCAA titles or world team spots against each other. And you're right. It absolutely turbocharges a lineup that was pretty strong last year. I mean, the best team in the world got even better.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see what these two can do, because I think that they will be in the mix to win gold medals. And certainly Hassan Yazdani Chorati from Iran, reigning world and Olympic champion, had an incredible tournament last year in Paris. But David pinned him in the World Cup in 2017, and David hasn't lost a match to a foreign competitor in the last 2 years. Only guy that's beaten him is Jaden Cox in the world team trials a year ago, the best of three. And then in Kyle's case, man, you look at what he has done this year, and he has rolled up some top level competitors. And he's going to be in the same weight class as Ahmed Gaji Magomedov from Russia, who handed him an 8-2 defeat in the finals of the Euregan. But having a chance to talk to Kyle about that match, you know, he remains super confident, and he talked about just the challenges that come with competing in the Euregan. You go over there and it's, you know, close to what, like a 40-hour trip, I think, just to get there, maybe something absurd like that, getting to Krasnoyarsk. And then you get there and shoot, it was, I think, the temperatures were 50 below while those guys were over there this January. And so there's a little bit of adversity with that. And Kyle's a guy who this year, you look at what he's done and some of those matches where he's had a chance to wrestle guys repeatedly, second time around, he has widened the gap on him. And I think of Jabril Hasanov from Azerbaijan. Kyle wrestled him, I think, to a 5-3 match or something like that in the World Cup. They had a rematch at Yasardagu in Turkey here a couple months ago, and Kyle pinned him. So those guys are going to be a handful.
We haven't talked about Jaden Cox too much, moving up a weight class. Where do you see him fitting into all this? Just with his, of course, he has the potential. He has 2 bronze medals at the Olympics. What a great story in 2016 when I think he was the 9 seed and ran that gauntlet and ended up beating Kyle Dake in the finals. And that's crazy to think about when you look at, here's a 174-pounder now and a 202-pounder. They met at 189 pounds in 2016, and they're both on the world team, but we haven't talked too much about Jaden Cox. Do you feel good about his upside and what he's going to bring to the table at the higher weight class?
92 kilos is there for the taking. with Sagulayev moving up to 97. Looks like a wide open weight class, and Jaden Cox, to me, has as good of opportunity as anybody. And, you know, we see him at times where if he can get himself in the frame of mind like he did in the World Team Trials last year against David Taylor, you think about that, like he's wrestling with a knee injury and finding a way to outscore David Taylor in that match. And, you know, when the guy is on top of his game, when he's feeling good, when he's motivated, he's as good as anybody in the world at that weight class. So that's a question. Will he bring that type of mentality and that type of performance to Budapest? If he does, I think he's right there in the mix to win a gold. The one thing with him last year, I mean, you look at his tournament, and it sounded like he didn't have the best of weight cuts last year when he was making 86 and really got off to a slow start in the tournament. And I think wrestling Hino from Finland, who competed at Campbell, I think Jaden was down like 6-0 and had a trap arm against him and found a way to come back and win that match. And just seemed like the further he got away from the scale, the better he got last year in Paris. And now will he, you know, obviously this having 6 additional kilos of wiggle room there has got to be helpful. I don't know what kind of job he's done managing his weight at 92, but you got to think that it's a better spot for him. And if he's good and feeling ready to go, I like his chances.
Before we get into point differential index, just want to make another pitch here. Hey, we appreciate anyone who listens to the program. We get feedback periodically, but if you have a guest or a question or something you want us to cover, we would love to do that. You can contact Andy, and I would love to even have an Ask Andy segment if you want to ask Andy a question. Email that in. You have the ways to do it. You contact Track Wrestling. I think your email address is, I don't want to misspeak on this, so I'll let you do it.
andy.hamilton@sportsengine.com. SPORTSENGINE.
So we're going to start a new segment. Ask Andy. If you have a question for Andy, you can do that.
What about Ask Kyle?
Well,
Quiz Kyle.
Yeah, that'd be okay, but the alliteration with Ask Andy is okay. Pretty neat how that all just plays. It's all short. So either one of us, if you have a question, we'd love to, or if you have a guest in mind that you want to have on the program, we'd love to hear that. We appreciate people who do listen and subscribe to the podcast. Thanks to Jason Bryant at Matt Talk Online for making this possible. And then you can catch it on a couple spots, trackwrestling.com or matttalkonline.com. We continue our...
Or iTunes. Download and listen on the go.
Yeah. There's probably other ones, too, that I'm missing. You know, Stitcher, is that one? Is there a place called Stitcher?
Yeah, ask JB.
Okay.
All this stuff. He's our tech guy.
Yeah, well, we'll ask Jason for sure. But we have a multitude of outlets to listen to the program, and we appreciate people who download and listen to us. And we appreciate the continual feedback on point differential index. 197 is the strangest one yet, Andy. It broke the mold.
It did break the mold.
It really did. Nothing about this makes sense. For those who have not listened, we have a new statistical analysis we're calling point differential index. It's pretty simple. If you win by 6, you get 6 points in your tally. If you lose by 6, you lose 6 points. Falls are worth 22 because the maximum you can get for a technical fall is 21. And then the average is your point differential index. The higher, the better. And as 197 proves, you can play 6th and have a monster number.
Is it worth, Kyle, explaining the origin of this and then maybe getting into the baseball numbers a little bit since that's where it all started?
We can.
All right. Go ahead. Explain the...
Well, the origin comes from our desire to see a numerical value on domination within the sport of wrestling. And so this came from a conversation we had. You're a baseball guru, and it came from...
Guru?
Yeah, you're okay. A guru. Yeah, absolutely. And so Andy had explained to me some different statistics in baseball that I was unaware of, like WHIP or ERA Plus or the one that...
WAR?
Yeah, WAR, wins above replacement. And so this came out of wins above replacement. So we wanted a numerical value on what you were able to accomplish throughout the season and really putting a premium on those people who get a fall. And so The 22, boy, we've seen that time and time again. When you factor that in, that really does make a difference, because as we've seen, really a 1-point loss or a 1-point win doesn't do that much. And a loss isn't necessarily fatal, but boy, anytime you lose big or get pinned, that really can be a death nail, as we found out with Ben Darmstadt, who had a monster number in sixth place, a 12.2, but had he ended the season a little bit better, it could have been even higher.
Yeah. And so as we were talking about, the origin of this came from like run differential for major leagues. And one of the things that was interesting to study is over the course of 162 games, the teams with the best run differentials are usually the teams that are standing in the end. And we talked about at the beginning of the year, or the beginning of the spring, I think, when we started, I don't even remember when we started,
it's been doing a few months,
point differential, but talking about it. But we're looking at some of the trends, and it said that it would be interesting to look at when the season was over, when the big league season was over, just to see run differential and how it played out. The five teams that were in the American League playoffs, the Red Sox, Yankees, Indians, Astros, and A's, finished 1 through 5 in run differential this year in the American League. Team that finished 6th in the American League, as far as the second, or I guess the last team eliminated, was the Tampa Bay Rays. They were 6th in run differential. So that's pretty interesting that that it played out the way it did. Then in the National League, the top 8 teams in run differential, there were 8 teams that were above, 8 teams that had a positive run differential. The Braves, Nationals, Brewers, Cubs, Cardinals, Dodgers, Rockies, Diamondbacks, they slotted in pretty much in order, with the exception of the Nationals. They had a plus 89. If I'm not mistaken, they had a game where they just beat the doors off the Mets, like 26-0 or something like that, where that skewed their numbers a little bit. But by and large, the teams that are still playing are the teams that had the highest run differential. So it's kind of a statistic that we looked at as, you know, middle of the season, kind of being predictive of where teams were going to be in the standings. And I remember midway through the season, we looked at the Seattle Mariners, and they had a really good record, but their run differential was a little bit out of whack. They weren't as high as you thought they might, maybe should have been, and they tailed off out of the playoff race. So hopefully we can learn a little bit from wrestling, that some of these numbers can be predictive of success to come, or maybe slumps yet to come. So,
and I think the goal here would be to use this and use it as a tool that can get you excited. I know growing up on baseball, I was just so into batting average and the 300 mark and what that meant, that was a good batting average. And so as you're a kid and you look on the back of baseball cards and you see how many home runs they got or someone's ERA, this is more than wins and losses. And I think if you had this in the program and had wins and losses, but then saw PDI, you could see what they've done on the season and their body of work based on that numerical value. Because as we've seen, you can see what kind of wrestler they are just based on the numbers. And if you have a pool of data of at least 20 matches, you're going to get a picture. Hey, if Bo Nickel has a 14.5, which is what I think he ended with, you pretty much know that this guy's dominating and not losing too many matches, and he didn't lose any matches. So in this case, the number really is a predictor of what kind of wrestler they are.
Yeah, 197 is going to be fun to dig into, just because I remember talking last year throughout the season about how it felt like that was a weight class where, you know, for the most part of the season, it felt like there were a couple tiers. Like there was Colin Moore seemed like the clear-cut favorite for the early part of the season. And then there were like maybe 4 or 5 guys after that. And then like 6 through 14 or 6 down to 20. If you interchanged the names in March, it wouldn't, you know, it's like throw them all into a bag and start pulling out names at that point. And that's how we saw some guys surface at the NCAA championships and have great tournaments and wind up on the podium that had been down quite a ways in the rankings. Kyle Connell,
yeah.
Jacob Holschlag come to mind right away. And so it's not all that surprising that when we dig into the numbers that 197 is completely bonkers.
197 truly was the goofiest weight class. And I think going into it, I just thought with Colin Moore getting third last year and then doing well at the Junior Worlds, I just thought he's going to be a lock for this, ends up getting fourth place. And it ended up being, as we mentioned, Ben Darmstadt was the darling of this weight class from the PDI point of view, 12.2. But as we mentioned, he lost his last three matches and they were by fall, 3-point loss and fall. So if you take those out, you got the number there, Andy, be 14.2.
Yeah, he lost 2 points on his average in three matches. From the 14.2 going into the NCAA semis. Winds up 12.2. Nonetheless, still the top guy at 197 pounds amongst all Americans. Number fueled by 17 pins and then a ton of majors and techs in there too. Just maybe as good as anybody, at least in terms of upper weights, as good as anybody on top in the country. And, you know, unfortunately he's injured to start the season, but, going to be a fun guy to watch for three more seasons at Cornell.
So the sixth, seventh, and eighth place finishers had the highest PDI. They were higher than the first, second, and third. So Ben Darmstadt was a 12.2, Shakur Rashid, 11.8, and then Willie Miklas from Missouri, 8.9. So all of those guys had monster numbers, but they placed sixth, seventh, and eighth. And Mike Machiavello had a 6.72, and he was your NCAA champion. Jared Haught, 5.9, and then Kyle Connell had a 4.4, and he really came out of nowhere. He got third place. So the first three were really strange.
So a few bullet points out of that. Shakur Rashid had 12 pins, and that fueled his number. As you mentioned, 11.8. Digging into Mike Machiavello, 6.7, really strong season, but his first win or first pin of the season didn't come until the NCAA semis. Only had one pin. Jared Haught, 5.9. He got pinned twice, so that minus 44 there hurt him quite a bit. Lost by fall to Willie Miklas and to Colin Moore. Then Kyle Connell, 4.4. If you could sum up 197 pounds in one guy, it would be Kyle Connell and how strange his season was. He got teched by Scotty Boykin and Preston Weigel. And he turns around and beats Weigel at the NCAA championships, got on a roll there. Also lost twice to Aaron Naples of Ohio, but he loses twice to Aaron Naples and then beats Colin Moore twice. So hard to predict Kyle Connell's performance this past season, particularly against in-state schools there, where you wouldn't think that you would beat Colin Moore twice and then lose to Aaron Naples twice, but that's what happened.
And so Mike Machiavello's only fall in the season was over Kyle Connell, so that hurt Connell's PDI a little bit, but it didn't make that much of a difference on the whole. Colin Moore, who I thought would win the NCAA championship, 6.9, and then Jacob Holschlag, another great story for you and I, ends up with a 4. He plays fifth. So as you look at these numbers, boy, what a goofy, goofy weight class.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see what this weight class looks like now with Bo Nickel on his way up, Shakur Rashid going down to 84, if that's the way that it materializes. It's the way it looks so far based off Penn State's roster. We're going to add some new names to the mix. You know, Jacob Warner coming in there.
Yeah, and I think Jacob Warner hurt Willie Miklas a little bit, didn't he? Didn't he get a major decision win
against him?
Yeah, so now you're going to see them in the Iowa State versus Iowa dual meet, and so that'll be, he got his 6-year transferring into Iowa State, so the competition continues. We have one more weight class that we're going to hit up. It's going to be on our next edition of On the Mat. We go to heavyweight, and who knows what's going to happen there. I don't think it can be goofier than 197. But
nope. No way.
As you know, that sometimes heavyweights don't score as much, so I have to anticipate outside of the first two, you're going to see some pretty low numbers.
Yeah, I would suspect so as well, although I think Sam Stoll had quite a few falls. I think it wouldn't surprise me if there are some guys in there who put up some pretty decent numbers.
Yeah, Jacob Casper.
For sure.
Yeah, might be one of those. So we'll see if the heavyweights can come through with a high PDI. What do you think? You want to talk to Joe Colon?
I do want to talk to Joe Colon.
Let's get to it. Our guest today is an All-American from the University of Northern Iowa. And now he gets to say he is a world team member. He's going to represent the United States at 134 pounds. Joe Colon, thank you for joining us.
Hey, no problem.
Hey, when we looked at this, Andy brought this up to me. I was looking at it from the United States point of view. I think you're the first world team member from the United States to qualify for the world championship since Mike McCready, but Andy brought up to me that Andy brought up to me that there was someone else. Do you remember who the other guy was that qualified for the world championships from the University of Northern Iowa?
Do I remember who
yeah.
it was?
Yeah. Didn't wrestle for our country.
No, I do not.
Andy, I'll let you do the reveal here.
Alex Dolly. Wrestled for Ireland.
Team Ireland. So you are you have a unique opportunity here. How did you get the news that you were going to wrestle at the World Championships?
The first call was just kind of like putting me on the radar of like, hey, you could possibly be wrestling. Coach Zadik gave me a call and told me that some things happened with Deshaun. He said he didn't really know fully what the thing was, but he said it might be a situation where we bring both of you and kind of see where he's at. So the first day and a half, I just thought I was just going to go and possibly go and like just go to be there if he couldn't go. But then they got more news about it and I got talking to Bill a little more and he said it's highly, 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 highly possible that I'll be wrestling. And then later actually got a call from Garrett. So Deshaun himself gave me a call and we talked for a little bit and so that's how I kind of found out.
Joe, how long ago was this and what did Deshaun have to say?
It was a couple of days, maybe a day or a couple of days ago, two days ago. It's unfortunate that it happened, you know, and to make the team this way and everything, just kind of told me the details of it and, we just kind of talked a little bit.
Since the world team trials, I'm assuming you've been training in earnest, even thinking that this might happen. What was your mentality from the world team trials until now? How did that training schedule look?
So right after all that stuff happened, I'm down the dumps, just dream shattered. I can't possibly go to, I'm not getting a chance to go and get a medal or go win a world medal. The goals are, and that opportunity was taken away. And my coaches told me to, as we were leaving Lehigh that night, we left and we're walking to the car, and Coach Steiner and Coach Silva were talking to me and telling me that I need to stay focused and, keep doing the right things. It's everything happens for a reason, and I have other guys that are still looking at me. I have a team here that looks up to me, and so I need to not just go off the deep end and think life's over and go do whatever I want and blah blah blah. Stay disciplined and stay on things, and I did. Kind of took a little bit of a break, and then I got news that they're having a double tour I could go to. So I went, I just recently got back from Poland to Belarus. I went and competed there. So I was still training and I've been to all the training camps. I was in San Diego and then I went straight from San Diego home for a couple of days to Poland, competed there for a week, then went to Belarus right after that for a week and competed there. Then went to a training camp in Colorado and then came home and So I've been still training and still doing everything that I need to do. It's been good. I mean, I've stayed disciplined and I'm ready to go. I mean, I don't feel that I'm out I'm not out shape. I'm not out, like, I'm not far. I didn't get far away from what was the task at hand.
Joe, you kind of answered my next question for me, which was going to be, are there any differences between the frame of mind you've been in versus world championship, I'm going to the tournament state of mind that you would be in if you had 4 or 5 months to prepare?
No, I think having 4 or 5 months to prepare, sometimes you think a lot. You can get caught up thinking, and you can put those mental handcuffs on and then just be locked into your mind and just keep thinking when you're not, just letting your body and mind just do the things and stay in the presence of the things that are happening. So, I mean, like leading up to Final X, I mean, after the U.S. Open, I had about 2 months to just think about all different kinds of situations went through my head on different scenarios. And right now, I mean, I've got 2 weeks, you know, I'm blessed with this opportunity. It's a great opportunity in front of me. And, I mean, my mind's no different than when I was going to Poland. When I was going to Poland and Belarus, I had on a piece of paper, it was like, these are your world championships. For me, I mean, I was going to a world ranking series tournament, and I knew that the number one and number two Russians were going to be in my weight in Poland. So I knew that, like, hey, like, go be able to wrestle those guys, you know, that kept me motivated. And then now I have this opportunity to go to the world championships and compete for Team USA. And it's just a great opportunity.
You go from not being on the team to being a 4 seed, I think, now. And
yeah,
the United States has had some pretty incredible success here in the last year plus, at least at the age group levels, with alternates winning medals, going off, you know, Aaron Brooks didn't even make the team last year and goes to Cadet World Championships and wins a gold. Zach Elam didn't know, kind of in your situation, didn't know he was going until an injury occurred like 2 weeks out, and then goes to Junior Worlds and wins a silver. You paid any attention to that stuff?
Yeah. I've watched those. I mean, a lot of all those guys train and compete, and then, I mean, stuff happens, and we have depth here in the States, and we don't just have one guy that can go and go win a medal. I mean, we have the depth, and we have guys that can go and compete, and the guys that can go and bring back medals to the States, even if they're not the one guy. We're very talented and deep at weight here in the States.
Going back to Final X, you had mentioned your disappointment and just the fallout from that. Break down your 3-match series. You win the first match and then, of course, drop the next two. When you have a chance to analyze it, what's your commentary on what happened?
It was a bad day. I've nothing against Deshaun or anything. And I mean, I've wrestled him a handful of times. That'd be the first time he tacked me. A while back, 2016, and then we wrestled again just this last year. Not, I guess, 2 years ago at the Dave Schultz, and I teched him. And then wrestled again at the Dave Schultz, and I teched him again. And then we had that wild, crazy barn burner at the U.S. Open, and just wrestling him that many times, I've known that, like, I mean, points are going to be scored. And I know I can dominate, but I also know he can score too, quick and in a hurry. I mean, I've seen him wrestle all the time, and leading up to it, I mean, I think I had a lot of time to sit back, think about things, and kind of got caught up in my mind. And then I wanted things to not, I wanted to control all the things I could control. And I think I kind of micromanaged things a little too much. And after that first match, I mean, I feel like I hit a wall. I wasn't moving. The second match, as well as I have been against him and doing that stuff. And I don't know where or what it was, whether I was thinking too much, whether I was just trying to micromanage the weight too much or what it was. And I mean, it was a bad day on my part. I didn't get the job done. And that second match was a close one. I think that first little scramble, he got me on my back, was a big point in that match. where I could have went if I would have committed and stayed with it and believed I could have scored in that position instead of just trying to hold on and then get put to my back. I got to my back. I mean, I kind of panicked. I thought I was about to get pinned. The third match, that one was an ass kicking. I wasn't moving. He was on fire. I mean, he hit his attack and scored and got to where he wanted to be and just dominated that match. Back to the second one, I mean, there was a point at the end of the match where I was down by four and it could have went either way, a lot of people say, the call. But, I mean, it went his way and it would have been 1-1. I needed to go and get it done with the third match, but I didn't.
Do you pay attention to the people that talk about how they were looking forward to those matches and how entertaining you guys are and the style you guys bring? That really was the marquee matchup of Final X, was this match against Nashawn Garrett and Joe Colon. Do you pay attention to that?
Yeah, I mean, I heard everybody talking about it, wanting to see. I mean, as a competitor, I mean, I like to score points. Nashawn likes to score points. I mean, you put those two together, I mean, you're gonna have a hell of a match. I mean, the fans, I mean, as me, like watching other matches, I mean, you want to see points scored. You want to see action. You want to see points on the board and guys going out there and competing. And I think that's what both of us do when we go and when we step on the line against each other or anybody. You know, we want to go and want to score more points than the other guy. And I mean, it just makes for a very, very interesting match. I mean, I think Bill, called us both something. It's like watching, he said, two animals just going at it, like just two different. We both have different styles, but we're both good in our areas that we're good at, and they just boom, attack each other and go.
You went to Clear Lake High School in Iowa, then you went to Iowa Central, won a junior college national championship there, then the University of Northern Iowa, third place finisher your senior year. Now you're in Fresno, California. Why the transition to go to the West Coast and be in California?
Yeah, I was at UNI and then had a chance to go and coach, help out at Grandview University in Des Moines there. My brother had half a year left there, and I got opportunity to go and go coach over there and help coach my brother that year, and I took advantage of it and got my feet kind of wet that year with the whole coaching stuff and helping guys out and being a part of, like, a big part of the program as a coach, and that's always been my goal as a coach. And then shortly, I mean, as I was there, I was talking to Coach Steiner and Coach Izzy about, like, the possibilities of coming out here and being a part of their staff. And we talked for a long while and eventually made plans to come out here and visit, and we did. And I mean, it was a little nerve-wracking at first, just because I've never really lived outside of Iowa. I've never really went away. And I decided it was probably about time to go do that. I mean, get away and go grow a little bit more. And I mean, it's been a great decision. It's been an awesome decision. I've changed a lot as a person, as a competitor, as just a human in general. Now, I mean, and I wanted, like I said, I wanted to coach. So I had a chance to be on staff at a D1 level. And the best part about it is that they were going to be a brand new program. They've had history before, but I mean, they're just bringing it back in. They're reinstating the program. And I thought, like, if I want to coach, this is a really, really great opportunity to go and be a part of something that is trying to build up. And I could learn. I could see what Coach Steiner and Coach Izzy do to make the program what it is and to build it, and what you have to do every day, behind the scenes stuff, the fundraising, the handling, athletes, parents, fans, just all the little things that you don't really normally get to see. I knew that I would be able to be a part of it and help and learn and see how things are done. And I mean, it's a new program. It's not, a lot of things weren't in place. They had to do everything to get in order to be where they're at. And I've been learning a lot. So it's been great for me as an athlete, competitor, and as the things I want to do when I'm done competing, as I'm doing right now, is coaching and just keep learning.
You've had the opportunity to wrestle for Doug Schwab and Troy Steiner, and two guys that won NCAA titles at Iowa around the same weight classes. Doug seems like he's got Mountain Dew running through his veins with how energetic and that he is. Troy seems quite a bit more quiet. Can you kind of compare and contrast what their coaching styles are like and how they have helped you?
They're both great coaches. They both bring different things to the table, and it's just awesome being able to have both of them at some point in my career. As I've had a lot of coaches help me throughout. I mean, I've been wrestling since I've been like five, six, seven years old. There's been a lot of people to help me and get to where I am today. And that's something that I think you have to take things from everybody, different coaches here and there, and use them in your way and be able to adjust to different coaches and stuff.
As far as being in Fresno, what's that like? If you're looking at what it's like in California, in Fresno, California, compared to Iowa, where you've spent the majority of your life, what's the adjustment like?
Well, I don't have to deal with the snow anymore. I don't have to wake up 20, 30 minutes early to go start your car, so the windows have to defrost. That part's kind of nice. But I don't know. It's here in Fresno, when I first was moving to California, and here in Fresno, I didn't really know about the whole Central Valley culture. It's pretty unique. I mean, you don't really think, when you think of California, you don't think of agriculture and farming and stuff like that. I mean, you think of beaches and big cities and that kind of stuff. And moving here and being in Fresno, I don't know if you guys have ever been here, but I mean, there's a lot of agriculture. It's a pretty blue collared town. They've a lot of hardworking people that work in the fields, kind of like back in Iowa. I mean, there's a lot of farmers out there that work and do all that. I mean, it was nice to be around here and see the agriculture stuff. It's a little different agriculture now, all cornfields and stuff like that, but you just still see that, like, that culture of farming. And that was really nice to actually to be. I mean, I didn't expect it to be out here. I mean, it's just really hot. It's nice all year round, pretty much. It gets chilly in the morning, but then it'll heat up. I mean, I like it a lot. It's been great.
When I think of Fresno State wrestling, I think of one name, and that's Stephen Abbas, three-time NCAA wrestling champion and an Olympic silver medalist. Have you gotten to know him at all?
Yes. Yep. I actually lived with him for a few months.
Have you gotten any coaching from him? Do you get a chance to work out with him? What are you able to glean from him to help
earlier,
you in your career?
Earlier in my year here, I did, when I first moved here, I did for a few months. He helped us train, and he helped me out. I wrestled around with him a little bit. Yeah, I mean, he's got great stuff. He's unique.
Blaise Cabell is still out there. Is he still a go-to guy for you? He was from University of Northern Iowa as well. What's it like to have him around?
We it's great. We both came into UNI at the same time. Recruiting wise, I went to junior college, and then when he was a freshman at UNI, I was just transferring in, and we lived with each other for a few years at UNI. When I first moved down here, I was living with Steiner for a couple months, and then I just decided to move in with them because I was always at their house. I was end up sleeping on the couch anyway, so I ended up just deciding to move into their house with them and shared room with Anthony Abedin. And yeah, he's one of my go-to guys. And we've known each other for a while. We wrestled in college together. We've lived together in college, and we lived with each other out here. He's still at it, hard working. He's ready to compete again here soon too.
How about even more Northern Iowa connections? You have an athletic director, John Krebs, who went to the University of Northern Iowa, was a fifth place finisher back in the day. you have a relationship with him?
Yeah, I did. I talked to John a lot when he was here. He's actually no longer here anymore. But he, when he was here, yes, I saw him all the time. I talked to him. He's a great dude. We had the, you and I alone.
Yeah. Where did he go?
I'm not sure where he is now. We've had some changes with our, athletics, with like an ADs and stuff like that.
All right, as far as training phase right now, we are talking to you on a Saturday. What's your turnaround time for leaving the country, being on that plane? What do you do next?
Honestly, I haven't got my flights yet, so I don't know exactly what time I'm leaving yet. I just know I'm leaving on Monday. They're working on it, getting it all fixed up. So, yeah, I'm leaving Monday sometime as far as I know. The time, I'm not 100% sure yet, but what I do from now till then is, a lot of the preparation has been done from, not just from now since Final X. Like, a lot of people think, like, I kind of haven't been doing anything. I've been preparing for this moment or this tournament my whole life. The goals have always been to go and win an Olympic, a world gold medal, and getting the opportunity to go and wrestle in this tournament. I've been training for this my whole life. It's always the goal. That's all a wrestler's goal. It's not just to go win a state title or a national title. The big one is a world and Olympic gold medal. And now I'm going to be in the tournament. I got my opportunity to go and see what I can do and go and show what I can do. That's what I want to do. And I want to help Team USA repeat. That's another big thing. It's not just me going to go and do one of my dreams. To be on a team that just won the Worlds last year is very, very inspiring. To wrestle alongside a lot of those guys is inspiring and motivating. I'm just really excited to go and wrestle alongside all those guys and help them bring back what they did last year.
Joe, what's going to be an X factor for you in terms of if something that's like really pivotal in terms of your medal hopes?
What's pivotal for me, what I need to do?
Yeah.
Just compete. There's so many different fields out there. There's different strategies to every guy you wrestle. There's game plans and fields and, you never know who you're going to wrestle. Most of the time you've never really wrestled that guy. For me, and then some of them are going to be newer faces. You don't know what, you watch tape and everything, but, the foreigners have a different feel. In college, I wanted to go. Sometimes I've noticed at the international level, sometimes me going after them too much kind of opens me up where, I gotta remember to stay patient, but aggressive. The biggest thing I think, honestly, is just keep moving my feet, stay in good position. The scores are going to come for me. I'm going to score points. Just can't force myself to score points. I got to be ready when on the whistle. Don't let them get in early or control the ties. Just wrestle hard and let my body do what it can do. Let my abilities do what they can do. But I just got to just stay focused mentally.
Who are you bringing as a training partner?
I'm using Deshaun's training partner. It's actually, I think, Zane Richardson, the Illinois guy.
Okay. So no real.
He already had his flight and everything. Yeah, already there.
So through this process, were you able to keep your weight down? You feel like you're ready on striking distance to get down to 134?
My weight's in check. Like I said, that's one thing that's helped me a lot is me being a coach is I guess you call it like practice what you preach a little bit. You're talking to the younger guys and those athletes. As I'm still competing, they're watching me. They're not dumb. I can't tell them to do certain things and then them see me do these things. Like eating right and just doing the right things on a daily basis to do the things you want to do. It's like a long marathon. a wrestling season, even just making weight and doing everything right. I mean, you can really mess up in a couple hours or a couple minutes your whole diet. Whereas you just got to stay disciplined and be on a routine. My weight's in check. That's not a big factor for me at all. I mean, the biggest thing for me, I think, is just stay focused, take advantage of this opportunity that I got.
You going to be able to have any family members over there? They been able to make last minute plans to get over to Budapest?
Yes. They're working on them right now. My mom, my uncle, girlfriend, my high school coach, and my high school. One of my best friends, he was my high school partner all the time too, is going to be making it out there. Tucker Weber. He's a coach at, out in Iowa at Atlantic High School. He's going to be able to make it out there. And yeah, so they're all getting these last minute plans together, and those guys are going to make it out there. And then I think there's a few, Dennis DeLito, a few people from here, Fresno State, that already had plans on going.
Hey, Iowa Central is a mixed martial arts pipeline. You going to keep the trend going?
I've thought about it a few times. There's a couple times I thought I was actually going to go do it, and then I had a different opportunity come up, and I ended up going there. And I don't know what that has in store for me. I know I've talked to Carrington Banks about it a few times, but I don't know what direction I'm going to go. I want to really coach. I think if I go that direction, it kind of takes the whole coaching stuff out a little bit, where I end up having to kind of step away from the whole college wrestling. It might be kind of hard to get back in. But right now, I mean, I'm just taking it day by day, just getting ready for the world championships here in 2 weeks. That's kind of the thing that where my mind's at right now. And we'll see where life takes me. We'll see what God has in store for me.
Well, it might be a baseball pitcher, because if you type in Joe Colon wrestling, it has your picture, but then it says you're a baseball pitcher from Puerto Rico, and it says you're making $507,000 a year. Congratulations on that.
On Wikipedia.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Nice work.
Yeah, I've actually seen that before.
Pretty funny that it worked out that way. Yeah. You're going to make a great legacy at the World Championships this year. Congratulations on this opportunity. You were right there. We look forward to seeing what you can do.
Thank you.
All right, Joe Colon, we appreciate it. For Joe Colon and Andy Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.